The fact is that, in my judgment, this electronic republic, driven by democratization, driven by the new technologies, is coming at us like a force of nature. And we may hate the idea of an increasing degree of direct democracy, or we may welcome it as giving people an opportunity to participate in the decisions that affect their own lives and their own future and the future of their children. But we've got to do something about it if it's going to be happening. And the one thing that we can do about it is improve the quality and character of public's information and focus on the need for common interest and public interest as opposed to private interest and individual fulfillment. Let's worry about fulfilling the whole community and moving on to the future.
Politics and the Power of the Internet, next on Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Join me now for conversations with Lawrence Grossman, former president of the Public Broadcasting Service, and James Kinsella, general manager at MSNBC. Major funding for this edition of Soundings comes from the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and Time Warner Cablevision. First on the program this week, Lawrence Grossman.
Well, we complain a lot about the fact that people seem to be so turned off and absent from a sense of civic responsibilities. But whom do we have to blame for that? You know, it's easy to blame television, and Lord knows it deserves a lot of blame.
Oh, come on, let's pick on it a little bit.
But the fact is, it's too easy to pick on television. But the fact is, whose fault is it that we rely entirely on television for the health of our democracy, to provide all the information we need? We expect it to be fair, and we expect it to be balanced, and we expect it to be thorough. And yet television is basically an entertainment medium, and it's being used as an entertainment medium. It's got great potential, and often it does provide information, particularly in crises. But we have ourselves to blame and our leaders to blame for not using other means of working and informing the public through civics education. Library of Congress should be recruited to serve the public and not just congressmen with information and data. Through open channels where we can have town meetings and participatory free time for politicians. There are many techniques that we can use to open the airwaves to the public.
Lawrence Grossman is the author of The Electronic Republic, an account of democracy in the information age. He was president of NBC News and the Public Broadcasting Service and currently serves as president of the Horizons Cable Network. During a recent visit to the National Humanities Center, he was part of the center's American Issues Forum, an ongoing exploration of issues and ideas of national consequence. Larry, let's begin with a quick explanation. What is the Electronic Republic?
Well, it's my version of what I think our government is going to be like as we move into the next century. And essentially what the Electronic Republic is, I believe, is a hybrid, a cross between the representative republic that we've been used to for the last 200 years and elements of direct democracy, which we haven't seen since ancient Athens 2,500 years ago when democracy was first invented.
Now, this is an odd configuration. Here you are, a sort of media honcho, PBS, NBC. You're looking into the next century, and yet you're inviting us also to look back 2,500 years.
Well, you know, those of us who try to predict what's going to happen with the media and where it's going have always been wrong, I mean, and every single time.
Right.
So the best way, I think, to find out what's going to happen in the future is to get a sense of what's gone on in the past. And what's very clear, to me at least, is that we are in a society now in which, for the first time ever, people, the citizens, can directly assess their own leaders. They can communicate directly with their own leaders, as well as having the president and members of the Congress communicate with them. And so it's the citizens who are joining the government and sitting at the table when the decisions are made, not just at election day, but in between elections as well.
Well, Larry, let me be a little bit impertinent. After all, here I am looking at the former head of NBC News and PBS. If you guys were the ones who were sort of in the driver's seat, where else is the decision going to come from but from the leadership of the networks, public as well as commercial, to do the kinds of things to put to, I guess the fashionable term would be to empower the electorate? You know, people aren't going to rise up. We have fantasies like, you know, the movie Network, that sort of thing, and they're all leaning out their windows yelling they're not going to take it anymore. But the real decisions get made by these people who run the networks. If they're not going to do it, why do we pass the buck back to the people?
Because they're not going to do it. They are small pieces of major publicly held companies whose leadership, whose presidents and CEOs and chief financial officers are held responsible by their boards to make the maximum profits. Their interest and focus is not on the health of our democracy or on the quality of information of our citizens.
But now wait, they want to preach the health of our democracy. They want to urge us to be more participatory and informed as an electorate, and yet in a way they are depriving us of the chance to do this.
Why should we expect and depend upon corporations that have businesses and are in business for the bottom line to preserve the health of our democracy, particularly in an era, in a period of deregulation? It used to be that they had these channels and were given these valuable assets free of charge in return for an obligation to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. They had certain responsibilities.
Right.
They no longer have those responsibilities. Let me give you a precedent that's a little further away from today's broadcasting, again going back to the past, when there was a conviction that the importance of education to the health of our economy, our society, and more particularly our democracy. And in 1862, Congress passed the Land-Grant Colleges Act that sold off public land, let the states sell it off, as long as they put the money into the creation of universities to make higher education for the first time available to all citizens, regardless of their rich, how rich or poor they were. Well, the equivalent today of the land, of the frontier land of a century ago, is the spectrum, the airwaves. This is the information age, the telecommunications era that's going through. That's enormously valuable. Mm-hmm. We can sell off some of that, lease it out instead of giving it away to commercial interests, and take some of that money and pour it back into education, into an interactive telecommunications public highway that can provide information about government, that can provide continuing education, that can provide quality children's programs. Why do we rely entirely on commercial networks who are in the entertainment business to save our democracy? That is just plain foolish.
Well, I think I can give you one answer. Three letters, NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters. People think that the NRA is one of the big lobbying fat cats in Washington. My sense is that the broadcasters as a group have an enormous amount of power. They have a vested interest in not doing the kind of thing that you're urging us to do.
Well, sure, they have an enormous power. If you were the owner of a corporation that is very profitable and had these public public airwaves free of charge, you would fight like the Dickens to preserve it too. That's why it becomes incumbent upon us as citizens to say, okay, but we're going to be heard, and we ought to develop public policies that will assure the continuance and good health of our democratic system and improve the quality of education of our people. And if television and telecommunications and the internet and direct broadcast via satellite and interactive telecommunications now can be used as tremendous educational and informational tools, then we ought to take advantage of it, and we ought to capture some of that for the public use and the public interest.
Is your sense, Larry Grossman, that we are headed in the right direction? I mean, your book has been accused of being neither fully optimistic nor fully pessimistic. How do we negotiate a middle ground here so that the citizenry actually does step forward and say to the broadcasters, to the politicians, time out. We need to get back to some civic square, civic virtues, all of that sort of high flown stuff. How about it?
Well, it's not an easy problem. You know, it used to be that politics was the chief entertainment of our society. 100 years ago, people went out on the public green. They'd listen to hours of political speeches and debates. They'd have torchlight parades, and everybody yearns for those days of the kind of sense of the common good. Lately, what we've been doing is worrying not so much about the common good, the public good, but about self-fulfillment, about individual, the emphasis on the individual, often, I think, at the penalty of a sense of community. And we've got to restore that sense of community. And it was interesting, again, you go back to history, during the American Revolution, before the American Revolution, when Samuel Adams felt the need that the people in Massachusetts were not sufficiently engaged in government, were not worried about the Stamp Act and the Revenue Act that some of the patriots were so opposed to, that the British were imposing. He organized a committee of correspondents to start educating and improving the knowledge of the public. Mm-hmm. And when somebody from New York, a Whig from New York, came to him and said, how do you get your people all engaged when ours are totally out to lunch? You know, they don't care about that. Right. He says, I blame you for not doing anything to get them engaged. And that's the situation that we're in right now.
So we look in the mirror and there's the answer.
That's exactly right.
Right.
People are upset at government. They're cynical about government. And now we've got to take some leadership and get something done about it. We're getting the message from the public that the government is not serving them well enough, and they don't feel as if there's, you know, people want term limits of the very people that they elect, mm-hmm. so that the public itself can have more power. We see the huge rise in ballot initiatives and referenda on the state level. In states like California and Oregon, more decisions are made in the ballot box by the general public than are being made in the state legislature and by the governor. And more money is being spent to lobby the general public right. in those states than is being spent to lobby the state capitol. So it means we're going through some major changes in the nature of our government. We're bringing it closer. You know, we're devolving power to the states, right. welfare, and taking power away from the federal government.
And electronically, directly back to the citizens.
And bringing it directly back to the citizens. Uh-huh. But as we talk about bringing it closer to the people who have greater power and control because the states are closer to them, what more mysterious and remote governments do we have than our state governments?
Right.
I mean, people don't know what's going on in Albany or Lansing or Raleigh, the state capitals, because there's no state CNN, there's no statewide C-SPAN, there's very poor coverage of state capitals and what goes on in state capitals.
Right.
So we've got to close that gap if we're going to have an informed electorate.
Well, let me again challenge you, Larry Grossman. Your book is The Electronic Republic. If the public is, as you say, in the deepest, most long-term sense, wise and able, can rise to the challenge, I will present you with one of my favorite whipping boys. Why is it that the public does not in some fashion stand up to the execrable levels that our local journalism has fallen to, particularly on television? It is puff. It is superficial. I mean, I look at it at night, and frankly, I despair of any kind of serious coverage of serious issues. Now, I'm painting this as a very bleak picture in order to get you to respond to it.
Is a bleak picture, and I think it's an accurate picture, and it's a very sad picture. And, of course, you can't be Pollyanna. I mean, public makes mistakes, and the public likes to be entertained, and we all are essentially or often lazy and right. subject to temptation. Television is a great medium of entertainment. It's easy to take. We've never before had 24-hour-a-day entertainment and sports to displace the consideration of serious issues and take us off the track of thinking about hard, difficult, and often sad problems. And so what the local news is doing is, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, right. grab your attention with the simple stuff and the right. most dramatic stuff. Uh-huh. And never mind what's going on at City Hall in any sophisticated or serious way. But here we have the opportunity now, thanks to the new developments in technology, to digital telecommunications, we have an opportunity to develop a huge and enormously valuable public telecommunications highway, just the way we developed the enormously valuable and critical interstate highway system.
Right.
Well, the telecommunications spectrum, as I've said, is the equivalent in the 21st century of what the infrastructure of highways and industrial plants was in the 20th and the 19th century. We have to recognize that our government is taking this major turn toward the engagement of citizens on a regular basis. And that means that we've got to do something about our educational system. We have got to focus on improving the quality and character of public education, and particularly civics education, which has gone out of fashion. We've got to, I think, develop an important superhighway for public service use, for education, for information, for civic affairs, for quality children's programming, for job retraining. You know, civics education is it's not enough to just front load it for kids. You've got to keep it going all through life. The ancient Greeks knew that. And Pericles in Athens got a famous line off. He said, you know, to us in Athens, a non-participating citizen is not just a silent citizen, he's a bad citizen. And we've got to recognize that, and we've got to take steps to do something like that. We can have our commercial broadcasters and commercial cable casters pay a certain amount of money, a very 1% of their revenues, mm-hmm. to for the use of these public resources. That can be brought into go into education. We can auction off our unused spectrum, which will produce tens of billions of dollars, some of which can go to pay off the deficit. But others, as with the Land Grant Colleges Act, can go to build great educational system through telecommunications. So there are initiatives that we can take, both in terms of getting the government to do stuff, in terms of getting our own communities to focus on improving the schools, even in our poorest districts. Mm-hmm. If we're going to have a democracy, then we're going to need an informed citizenry. And it's the degree of information and character of our citizens becomes much more important when we're not just relying on them once every 4 years to cast a ballot. We're now relying on them because we're polling them every day of the week throughout the year to be sure that they are informed so that they can make sensible decisions and advise and instruct their leaders as to how they want them to vote.
Lawrence Grossman is the author of The Electronic Republic, a 20th Century Fund book available in paperback from Penguin Books. He was president of NBC News and the Public Broadcasting Service and currently serves as president of the Horizons Cable Network. You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Straight ahead, more about politics and the power of the Internet. I'll talk with James Kinsella, recently cited as one of the 20 most influential people on the World Wide Web.
But there's something much different happening that makes cyberspace a very, very unique place for politics. And that is media acts, and the word media, of course, means go between. Right. Media acts as this filter for information and news to send to the individual consumer, the individual reader, viewer, etc. That's increasingly going away in cyberspace because people have the ability to talk to each other, in many ways, create their own news. Media is being bypassed. It first started, media is absolutely being bypassed on the web, and it first started with candidates. Candidates putting up their own sites, political parties putting up their own sites. You've got all of these things that are rolling out and politicians' attempts to bypass the media.
James Kinsella is general manager of MSNBC. Before that, he established Time Daily, Time Magazine's online newsfeed, and Time Warner's Pathfinder.
The quality of politics is both terrific and really awful and somewhat dangerous.
In what way?
So it's both sides of the coin here. Yeah. On the one side, it's terrific because people are able to participate in a political process or an understanding of a political process. Those kinds of things that are interactive, on the spot, play off of the news, all of that really, in a way more powerful than anything I have ever seen, gives the firsthand look, hands-on approach to policymaking and choosing a president that really hasn't been possible before.
Well, now you say, Jim, that it's powerful, but the question is it good? Is it accurate? Is it reliable? I mean, one of the reasons that you're here at this conference at the Humanities Center is to talk about the continuum between instant politics, you know, the plebiscite kind of thing that I take it can occur in cyberspace, on the Internet, and then at the other end, you know, this large and noble phrase, deliberative democracy, where people kind of think things through. Am I misunderstanding the continuum?
No, I think you're on target. There are also two dangerous aspects to this. One is the instantaneousness of it.
Right.
For example, there are any number of areas on the web now in which you can go in and give your viewpoint or weigh in and in a polling situation. Immediately, you can then see how you stack up against everybody else who's been polled. Uh-huh. The Oklahoma City bombing, for example, that spurred hundreds of cyber polls or polls on the web and on the Internet, which allowed people to say, yes, our country is actually being headed in this crisis by effectively, or it's not. And because it's not, we should change government, or because it is, we should keep government. turns out, on the web that most people were saying, we're in a time of crisis. Clinton handled this well. We should stay with Clinton. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. Suddenly you get a kind of mob sensibility that's responding directly to news and making up its mind at the spur of the moment. So much for deliberative democracy. Mm-hmm. There's a second aspect of this, too, when you think about who has computers and who's connected to the net right now. This isn't exactly the face of America.
We're talking about a relatively small number of people, aren't we?
We're talking at its most about 10 million people in the United States. Uh-huh. So it's not quite a mass medium yet. In fact, it's somewhat far from a mass medium. The media pundits would say that 40 million people or more is generally going to indicate that we're at mass medium level. But the people who are on typically are younger, typically are male, typically are well-educated, and they have disposable income that allows them typically to have a computer and to have an internet connection at home. Many of them use it at work, but most of them have disposable income that allows them to have that kind of set up at home.
What does that kind of demographic profile do to the understanding that we have as a people? And it's difficult to generalize that way. Let's put it to you this way, Jim Kinsella. What does that profile do to the way the news about politics gets reported when we're assuming that these cyber voters, whatever you want to call them, are representative, when in fact they are not representative of the state of mind out there?
Well, at the moment, I don't think it's having an enormous amount of impact on how the news is being reported, but it will. It's certainly having an impact on how these sites are created and how the internet is run and how it's essentially consumed out there. You'll see that there's a much greater focus on the kinds of issues that are going to concern these users. Let me give you an example. Guns and gun ownership. There is a far greater percentage of people who are frequent internet users who strongly believe in the right to bear arms virtually in any circumstance. You also see an enormous proliferation of right to bear arms sites. That would suggest that this is indeed a preoccupation of most of Americans, in which the data doesn't show that a great majority of Americans believe this is a central issue in their lives. They're much more likely to say crime is, or unemployment is, a number of other issues. Mm-hmm. When you're on the web and you're thinking about political issues, I can tell you from a great deal of experience on the web, people aren't talking generally about unemployment. It's not that important to them because you're typically talking to highly skilled individuals whose skill set is much sought after.
Right.
So the interest in those things that are actually engaged in most discussion of and really are trigger points aren't really going to be aren't reflective of the greater population to the extent that a true mass medium might.
Let's come back, Jim Kinsella, to a point that you made a moment ago, and that is to say the way the media are being bypassed. My take on that would be, tell me if I'm right or wrong, there's a lot of nervous advertisers out there, and we have to take that into account when we speak of political communication. What about this?
This might be a bit of a sidetrack, but it's fascinating to look at corporate America and how they're actually trying to deal with this medium. This is not an advertising medium. It simply isn't, despite the fact that tens of millions of dollars, about $100 million plus, have been spent by advertisers in this medium. This is not the place to advertise in any traditional sense. And one of the things that corporations are doing increasingly is trying to figure out, very similar to what politicians have done, how do we actually bypass the media, and how do we reach and have a direct communication with the user, consumer, etc. Very similar efforts are happening on both sides of this fence, on the corporate advertising side and on the politician, political side, political message side. Anyone who's got a message that is intended to be reached by a consumer will sooner or later realize this is not an advertising medium. Simply mm-hmm. putting up an advertisement on a website or in a magazine page isn't working. We have far more effect if we actually can get a relationship going with the consumer or the user or the special interest that we focus on our touch. My feeling is that we have an opportunity now to take that computer and make it the single most powerful personal appliance that humankind has ever known. we're only going to do that if we make it so intuitive to use. And there are lots of things out there and lots of efforts underway to make it much easier. Mm-hmm. In some communities, in fact, you can get onto an extremely high-speed connection to the net so that your experience is increasingly like TV. Images come down very quickly, and it is a much more intuitive way to do that. That isn't the future. That's now in many small towns, actually, across America, where there are pretty advanced cable systems.
So I take it if we come to summaries or bottom lines, Jim Kinsella, that you are very optimistic about what digital communications will do, the effects that they will have on what we're calling deliberative democracy. It's going to be a salutary kind of thing in our political culture.
It's going to change the way we interact. It's going to change the way we live. It's going to change the way we think. It will change our lives. I'm not saying it may. It will, flat out. And I think the sooner that people begin to participate in building that, the more it's going to reflect the values that they hold dear. If they don't, it will certainly be built by other people.
James Kinsella is general manager of MSNBC. Before that, he established Time Daily, Time Magazine's online news feed, and Time Warner's Pathfinder. He participated in a recent conference at the National Humanities Center on deliberative democracy in the information age. You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas. I'm Wayne Pond. Major funding for this edition of Soundings came from the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and Time Warner Cablevision. I'll be back in just a moment with information about where to write for a cassette tape of this program. You're listening to Soundings from the National Humanities Center. For a cassette tape, call us at 919-549-0661 or send $10 to Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. This week, it's program number 848. Our email address is sounding, S-O-U-N-D-I-N-G, at uncecs.edu. Visit our new site on the World Wide Web at nhc.rtp.nc.us:8080. Next week on Soundings, award-winning poetry from David Mason of Morehead State University. David Mason will be here to read from and talk about his latest collection of poems, The Country I Remember. Until next week's show, thanks for listening to Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.